Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivrajika Acharya Stuktara Satashi Simat His Divine Grace Lesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Gopremanande Hari Hari Bo Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All grace to the assembled devotees All grace to the assembled devotees All grace to the assembled devotees Agarishya Shri Shri Guru Gauranga. Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Palam Shuka Mukaram Mitas Ravasam Yitam Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Mohora Horasika Bhuvi Bhavuka Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 22, The Marriage of Karma Muni and Devahuti, text number 21. Word meanings, Maitreya, the great sage Maitreya, Uvacha said, Saha, he, Kardama. Ugradanban, O great warrior Vidura, Iyat, this much, Eva only, Abhabhashe, spoke, Asit, became, Cha and Dushnim, silent. Aravindanabham, Lord Vishnu, whose navel is adorned by a lotus. Dhiya, by thought, Upagrinan, seizing, Smita Shobitena, beautified by his smile, Mukena, by his face, Chetaha, the mind, Lulubhe, was captivated, Devahutya of Devahuti. Maitreya Uvacha. Sa ugradanvan yade vabhashe. Asit shatushnim maravindanabham. Dhiyo pragnan smita shobitena. Mukena cheto lulube devahutya. Lulube devahutya. Maitreya uvacha. Sa ugratanvan yare vabhashe. Asit shatushnim maravindanabham. Dhiyo pragnan smita shobitena. Mukena cheto lulube devahutya. Ugradandva niyadeva bhava bhashe. Asit chatushnim maravindanabham. Dhiyo pragrinan smita shobitena. Mukena cheto lulube devahutya. Sa ugradanvani arivabhashe. Asit chatushnim maravindanabham. Dhiyo pragrinan smita shobitena. Mukena cheto lulube devahutya. Sa ugradanvani arivabhashe. Asit chatushnim maravindanabham. Dhiyo pragrinan smita shobitena. Mukena cheto lulube devahutya. Translation, Sri Maitreya said, O great warrior Vidura, the sage Kardama said this much only, and then became silent, thinking of his worshipable Lord Vishnu, who has a lotus on his navel. As he silently smiled, his face captured the mind of Devahuti, who began to meditate upon the great sage. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It appears that Kardama Muni was fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness Because as soon as he became silent, he at once began to think of Lord Vishnu. That is the way of Krishna consciousness. Pure devotees are so absorbed in thought of Krishna that they have no other engagements. Although they may seem to think to act, they may seem to think or act otherwise, they are always thinking of Krishna. The smile of such a Krishna conscious person is so attractive that simply by smiling he wins so many admirers, disciples, and followers. Om jnanati mirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Sa ugra dhanban. Maitreya is addressing Vidura as, what is the translation? O great warrior, ugra dhanban. I always find it interesting how Maitreya, repeatedly he addresses Vidura with these Kshatriya names. I did a little looking on the internet. I was trying to find out, is there any example of Vidura fighting? I couldn't find anything, but what I found was there was some mention that it's described in the Mahabharata that Vidura was actually trained as a fighter. We know he carried a bow. So he knew military arts, but we don't find anywhere that he actually fought in any battles. That's not to say that he didn't, but at least in the Mahabharata, it doesn't mention him fighting anywhere. So here he's addressing him as a great warrior. You wouldn't generally think of Vidura as a warrior because of, well, how he was born, and we see him more as a Brahmin, really, a preacher. So it says he spoke this much only. Basically, that's the last couple of verses where he's saying, quite interesting, these last couple of verses. Therefore, I shall accept this chaste girl as my wife on the condition that after she bears semen from my body, I shall accept the life of devotional service accepted by the most perfect human beings. That process was described by Lord Vishnu. It is free from envy. The highest authority for me is the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom this wonderful creation emanates and in whom its sustenance and dissolution rest. He is the origin of all Prajapatis, the personalities meant to produce living entities. So Prabhupada makes interesting points in these two purports about how he's a Prajapati, so he's supposed to produce children. So he's saying my authority is not exactly Lord Brahma who wants me to produce children. My authority is Lord Vishnu. And what Lord Vishnu wants is for me to be Krishna conscious, basically. So I'll produce a son, an incarnation of the Lord. And actually, Prabhupada, I think he says that he only produced one child, but he produces nine daughters, and then he produces Lord Kapila Dev. So he's already indicated in the way he's speaking that he's Krishna conscious. And here it says, you know, as soon as he stopped, then immediately he essentially kind of went into samadhi. And but as he was speaking, then he was smiling. And it says, his face captured the mind of Devahuti, who began to meditate upon the great sage. So actually, it doesn't say in the words exactly in the Sanskrit that she was meditating, but it does say that she was captivated. What's this, the Sanskrit for the smiling? It said, smita shobitena. So smita is smile. And shobitena means by the beauty, or beauty by the, so by the beauty of his smile, mukena on his face, he captivated the mind of Devahuti. The Prabhupada makes this interesting point at the end. The smile of such a Krishna conscious person is so attractive that simply by smiling he wins so many admirers, disciples, and followers. So he doesn't even have to preach, actually, he just has to smile. I was seeing how one of the devotees wanted to see Prabhupada smile, obviously. If you could make Prabhupada smile, then that made your day, made your life. And if he didn't smile, when he was angry, we read about Yamuna Devi. She talks about how, of course, she was very close to Prabhupada. She had so much personal association with him. and she loved serving him. But when he became angry, she would just go hide someplace. She couldn't handle his angry moods. So generally, actually, it says about Krishna that Krishna is always smiling. Whenever you hear a description of Krishna, it says that he's always smiling. I think some of the scenes in Krishna, in the Krishna book or 10th canto, and I think Krishna was smiling then. Actually, there's one notable place where he, when Pondraka's representative comes to him and talks, you know, telling Krishna to get rid of his symbols and so on, his conch club disc and lotus. And after this person gave his little speech, and everybody, the assembly, everyone just cracked up. They laughed, full-heartedly they laughed, and Krishna laughed how foolish this Pondraka was. So I'm going to read some references to smiling, actually, different verses in the Bhagavatam. Because it's interesting that sometimes the significance of the smiles of Krishna, here we're hearing about the smile of this great sage or the smile of the devotee. But we hear other of course, we hear about Krishna smiling. And in different situations. Actually, first I wanted to mention this. Many years ago, I was a head pujari, and used to wake up the deities every day. And there's a verse that I don't know if it's still part, because there's a different deity worship book than when I was doing it. But this verse 3925, the first couple of lines, so sava dabra karuno bhagavan vridha prema smitena nayamam buduham vrijimpan. This phrase here, prema smitena, prema love smitena by smiling. So the devotee waking the Lord, when the pujari wakes the Lord, the pujari offers this verse from the Bhagavatam. The Lord, who is supreme and is the oldest of all, is unlimitedly merciful. I wish that he may smilingly bestow his benediction upon me by opening his lotus eyes. So this is like the personified Vedas, the whole chapter personified Vedas, they're praying to the Lord as he's waking at the beginning of the creation. So in Bhagavad Gita we have this, you may remember. O descendant of Bharata, at that time Krishna, smiling in the midst of both the armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. So this is Bhagavad Gita 2:10. So this is at the, you know, in the first chapter, Arjuna is complaining. He doesn't want to do what he's supposed to be doing, killing his friends and relatives, so many people that he knows. So he's hesitating to do his duty. And in the beginning of the second chapter, he also continues in that way, saying he doesn't want to fight. Of course, Krishna, he says, you know, why you're acting like a eunuch, control yourself. But then Arjuna finally says, Krishna, I accept you as my guru, basically. Tell me what to do. So then this is that next verse. Krishna, smiling in the midst of both the armies, spoke the following words. So you might think, well, why was Krishna smiling exactly? I was thinking, my first reaction would be, if I were to interpret the smile, I'd probably think he's smiling because he's thinking, Arjuna, you're in Maya. You just come on, Arjuna, you're in Maya, I'm going to take care of you. But this is what Prabhupada says. He said, Krishna was smiling because a friend had chosen to become a disciple. So he was happy. Okay, finally, after all these arguments, now Arjuna is turning to me as a guru and he wants to hear what I have to say. So that's from the Bhagavad Gita. So then in the teaching, in the third canto, we have the teachings of Lord Kapila. Really the nicest place pretty much in the Bhagavatam when you hear a description of the Lord for meditation, because Kapila is teaching meditation on the Lord in the heart. And or not necessarily Lord in the heart, but Lord Vishnu. And a beautiful description there. It goes from his feet all the way up. So this is a few verses. Actually, this is text 328:32. Let's see, is this the verse? Yes. Oh, yeah, okay. So this is the verse. A yogi should similarly meditate on the most benevolent smile of Lord Srihari, a smile which, for all those who bow to him, dries away the ocean of tears caused by intense grief. So this is from Prabhupada's purport to that verse. The entire universe is full of miseries, and therefore the inhabitants of this material universe are always shedding tears out of intense grief. It's funny, I was raised as a Catholic, so I remember there was a certain time of year, there was some prayer we used to chant, and I always just remember this one line. It says something like, "O Lord, please save me, drowning in this valley of tears." So that's the material world. It's full of tears. The Prabhupada says the whole material world is full of miseries, and therefore the inhabitants of the material universe are always shedding tears out of intense grief. There is a great ocean of water made from such tears. But for one who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of God, the ocean of tears is at once dried up. One need only see the charming smile of the Supreme Lord. In other words, the bereavement of material existence immediately subsides when one sees the charming smile of the Lord. I was reading this, I was thinking, there are places it comes up in the Bhagavatam, we have the phrase enchanting smile. Krishna has an enchanting smile. So I was saying, it's interesting that it has the word chanting in the middle of it. I looked up the etymology of the word, and actually it does come, they call it P-I-E, which is pre-Indo-European languages, which is basically Sanskrit they're talking about. So enchanting actually means, the chant is actually means to sing in that verse. And enchanting means in. So enchanting is actually about casting a spell. You enchant someone, you cast a spell on them. So I was saying, when we want Krishna to cast his spell. So by chanting, we want to be enchanted by Krishna's charming smile, as mentioned here. So that there's the next verse after this, when Prabhupada says this in the purport, it's related. It is described herein that one should meditate on the laughter. So this, first it talks about his smile, then it talks about Lord Vishnu's laughter, which is interesting. You think that's the sage is meditating, he's meditating on the feet and gradually going up. Finally he makes it to Lord Vishnu's face and he sees him smiling in his meditation. Then he actually thinks of him laughing. Lord Vishnu, we tend not to think of Lord Vishnu laughing. He seems to be very sober. There's so much pomp and circumstance surrounding him. So anyway, it says here, now Prabhupada says, so it is described herein that one should meditate on the laughter or smiling of Vishnu. There is no other activity that can completely cleanse the heart of the devotee. The exceptional beauty of the laughter of Lord Vishnu is that when he smiles, his small teeth, which resemble the buds of jasmine flowers, at once become reddish, reflecting his rosy lips. So his lips reflect off his teeth. If the yogi is able to place the beautiful face of the Lord in the core of his heart, he will be completely satisfied. In other words, when one is absorbed in seeing the beauty of the Lord within himself, the material attraction can no longer disturb him. So beautiful meditation. You see how the yogis, they become free of all material attachments because of this meditation on the Lord. So then there's this beautiful verse. This is quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's actually from the Krishna Karnamrita, Bilva Mangal Thakur. Madhuram, madhuram, vapurasya vibhor. Madhuram, madhuram, vadanam, madhuram. Madhugandhi mridu smitam etaraho. Madhuram, 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 madhuram. So mridu smitam, beautiful smile. Aho, aho means oh. Oh, my Lord, the transcendental body of Krishna is very sweet, and his face is even sweeter than his body. But his soft smile, which has the fragrance of honey, is sweeter still. His smile has fragrance. Our smiles tend not to have fragrance. So then, I'll just move on to some different things. Here's a reference from Kunti Devi, that section of the Bhagavatam. Thus, the Lord, thus hearing the prayers of Kunti Devi, composed in choice words for his glorification, mildly smiled. Actually, I don't know what the Sanskrit is, but we find the word a lot, prahasan. Prahasan is usually just translated as smiling. Hasa, or hasa. Hasa also means laughter or smiling, you know, in the nectar of devotion. Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, it analyzes different smiles and laughter of the Lord, and from just a gentle smile to a full-on laughter. So here it says in this verse, that smile of Krishna's when he heard Kunti Devi's prayers was as enchanting as his mystic power. So this comes out here in the verse today. Lulupe, she was captivated by his smile. So the idea is here, Krishna has mystic power, so he can put a spell on you, but all he has to do is smile, and that will put a spell on you too. I was looking at different words, different synonyms. There's another Sanskrit word, smada. And I was thinking, there's a devotee, a disciple of Prabhupada in England, Smada Hari. So smada, actually, it's translated in different ways, but sometimes it just means Cupid, or the attractive power of Cupid, or lust even. Or in the context of Krishna and the gopis, of course, it means their overwhelming attraction to him. So, of course, one of the attractive features, sometimes the gopis, they describe different features of Krishna. So, of course, they'll mention his smile. So they just become enchanted. It's just like mystic power, a spell being cast on you. So I'll go on here. Mars Parikshit, who was qualified to accept surrender and whose glories are worthy of being sung in history, did not kill the poor surrendered and fallen Kali, but smiled compassionately, for he was kind to the poor. So we get kind of doing a little survey of different smiling episodes. So this, you know, Maharaj Pariksit, at first, what did he do? He drew up his sword. He was going to kill Kali because Kali was beating the legs of a cow. But then Kali said, you know, protect me. I'm your citizen. So because Maharaj Pariksit was Dharma Vit, he knew Dharma. So he said, yes, actually, I have to. And he also saw how, you know, miserable and wretched this Kali was. He felt it was his duty. So it says he smiled compassionately, for he was kind to the poor. That's one of the great qualities. Actually, in Vedic literature, the Brahmins are so highly praised. One example of that is the story of King Nriga, and he became a lizard, that story in the 10th canto. So the lesson of that chapter is don't steal from a Brahmin, even by accident. And if you read the last verses of that chapter, ooh, boy, Krishna is really heavy. He talks so heavy there. He says, even if don't do it by mistake, you do it by mistake and you're still going to go to hell. Really, really heavy. So Kshatriyas, they tend to be, now Krishna, he's talking like a Kshatriya, and also he's praising the Brahmanas so highly. Of course, he does it also when Kumaras go to Vaikuntha, and he's apologizing for what his servants, Jaya and Vijay, did. And he's praising the Brahmanas so highly. But the Kshatriyas also, they had to have remarkable qualities. I also always think of this idea of being a Rajarshi. You had to be like a Kshatriya, but you had to have almost a heart, in some ways, a heart of a Brahmin at the same time. It's hard to imagine how both things can exist. But we see it in some of these great personalities, like Yudhishthira Maharaj. He certainly had both sides in his nature. He fought when he had to, but he was a gentle soul. So Maharaj Pariksit was like that also. That's called someone who's very integrated, you can say, can handle that kind of thing. Even Krishna, of course, we know he has these four personalities that are described, Dhiradatta, Dhiradatta, and so on, Dhirapashanta, Dhiralalita. So they're kind of contradictory, but they coexist within Krishna because he's got it together, as we say. He's got it together. He can have he can have these different aspects of himself and not be messed up. So King Pariksit is showing that fierceness at first, but then compassion, smiling compassionately. So since we're talking about Kardama Muni here, here's a little something. Kardama Muni, now he had 9 daughters. So Lord Brahma came with sages, 9 sages, his sons, and they were married. They married the 9 daughters of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. So this is mentioned. Kardama Muni handed over his daughter Kala to Marichi, and another Anasuya to Atri. So this is the lineage of Atri and Atri Rishi. His wife was Anasuya, one of the daughters of Kardama Muni. So just to introduce him, because of this verse, the story that Atreya Rishi and his wife, they were performing austerities and praying to the Lord. They wanted to have a son. And because they prayed in some kind of vague way, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva all came. Because they're all lords in some way. They're all Ishwaras. So, says the sage Maitreya continued, upon hearing Atri Muni speak in that way, the three great deities smiled. And they replied in the following sweet words. So here you have all three arrived, and it was a humorous situation because he was calling for God and then three people showed up. So they smiled at his innocence, I think you could say. They were pleased with him. Of course, they offered him a child. Each one of them, they incarnated, or a partial aspect of them incarnated. Now, one of the sons was Soma, the moon god. I made a mistake last time I gave class. I said that he was conceived with the perspiration of Atri Muni, but it wasn't his perspiration, it was his tears. Prabhupada actually says he impregnated the womb of Anasuya with his tears, and Soma was born. So now here's something from the fifth canto. Indra, the king of heaven, who was very materially opulent, became envious of King Rishabhdev. Consequently, he stopped pouring water on the planet known as Bharatvarsha. At that time, the Supreme Lord Rishabhdev, the master of all mystic power, understood King Indra's purpose and smiled a little. Then by his own prowess, through Yoga Maya, his internal potency, he profusely poured water on his own place, which was known as Ajanaba. So Indra, you know how he gets nervous. It's interesting because I think it's before this. Anyway, at some point, King Indra offers Rishabhdev, he gives him a girl to be his wife, Jayanti, right? Her name is Jayanti. So he had this favorable relationship, but at some point, apparently he got nervous because Rishabhdev was so powerful. So then he stopped pouring rain there. He was trying to attack him in some way. Just the opposite of the Govardhan Leela, right? Govardhan Leela gave too much rain. Lord Rishabhdev, he stopped the rain. But Lord Rishabhdev, he just took it in stride, as we say. He just smiled and he produced rain himself. He didn't have to worry about the blessings of King Indra. So he smiled. So here's something, Jadbharat. Jadbharat was the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He always carried the form of the Lord within his heart. He was the dear friend of all living beings and did not entertain any bodily conception. He therefore smiled and spoke the following words. So you know the scene, right? Jadbharat is forced to carry the palanquin of King Rahugana, and King Rahugana, of course, he's walking not very well, stumbling a lot because he's avoiding the insects on the ground. And the king gets very upset with him, and he talks about him in a very sarcastic way. Oh, you look so weak, and you must be tired, and you have to carry this by yourself. And he's talking in a really sarcastic way, insulting way. But actually, later it says that he was somewhat disturbed, but he just overcame it. Jadbharat overcame it. So we see that here. He's not showing that he's disturbed. He just smiles. And then he starts preaching to Rahugana. And then Rahugana says, whoa, you're a great soul. What's the story here? So here we have the beautiful smile of Jadbharat. Let's see. That's this one. Being thus addressed by the messengers of Yamaraj. So this is, of course, the Ajamil story. After Ajamil was saved by the Vishnu Dutas, the Vishnu Dutas said to the Yama Dutas, you're representatives of Yamaraj, so you're supposed to know Dharma. He's Dharmaraj, so tell us about Dharma. So it says here, Oh no, I think the Vishnu Dutas, the Yamadutas asked them, "Who are you? We're here doing our job. So who are you?" And it says, being thus addressed by the messengers of Yamaraj, the servants of Vasudev smiled and spoke the following words in voices as deep as the sound of rumbling clouds. I gave a class on that idea too one time, because Krishna's voice is always described like this. It's interesting because he's just a young boy in Vrindavan, and even there, his voice is very deep, like the sound of rumbling clouds. So they smiled at the messengers of Yamaraj before they spoke to them, and then they said, tell us what is dharma, which is interesting when you read, when they explain what is dharma, everything they say is right, actually. But they're missing one little thing, the power of the holy name. So when the Vishnu Dutas the Yamadutas are finished speaking, they say, oh, what a horrible thing that you don't know, you're supposed to be representatives of the Yamaraj, but you don't actually know dharma. Of course, they did up to a point, but they didn't know how important, how powerful is the chanting of the holy name. So here's something, this is from the sixth canto. O King Parikshit, following the Lord's instructions, the demigods approached Dadichi, the son of Atharva. He was very liberal, and when they begged him to give them his body, he at once partially agreed. However, just to hear religious instructions from them, he smiled and jokingly spoke as follows. So, this is in the context of the Vritrasura Leela, the King Indra is going to eventually kill Vritrasura, but at some point they're terrified. He's a huge, powerful asura, acting as a devotee, acting as an asura, cursed to be an asura temporarily. So they asked Dadichi, actually Lord Vishnu sends them to Dadichi, and says, ask Dadichi for his bones and then make a weapon out of those bones. So they asked Dadichi, we want you to commit suicide so we can have your bones. And he says, he said he wanted to hear just, and he smiled and jokingly spoke as follows. So he said, don't you know that death is so painful, nobody wants to die? How can you ask me for my body? So then the demigods replied, they actually kind of preached to him. And then they tell him that, you know, one should use one's life for the service of others, that kind of thing. They talk some dharma. So then he says, oh, demigods, one who has no... He continues, Dadichi, or the Jancha, he's also called, he replies in the same mood. He says, oh, demigods, one who has no compassion for humanity and its suffering and does not sacrifice his impermanent body for the higher causes of religious principles or eternal glory is certainly pitied even by the immovable beings. Essentially, he's saying, I should just... it's pitiful if I don't give you my body. So Prabhupada, in his purport, he says, this is pretty sobering. he says, one should join the Krishna consciousness movement, following the examples of such personalities. Oh, now, actually, Prabhupada, earlier in the purport, he says, what Dadichi is mentioning, this principle of giving everything in the service of the Lord, he said, we see that, and he gave examples of Lord Chaitanya leaving home, or taking sannyas, and the six Goswamis especially. He mentions them. So then he says, later in the purport, he says, one should join the Krishna consciousness movement following the examples of such great personalities as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, and before them the great sage Dadichi. Instead of wasting one's life for temporary bodily comforts, one should always be prepared to give up one's life for better causes. After all, the body will be destroyed. Therefore, one should sacrifice it for the glory of distributing religious principles throughout the world. It's really a call for action, isn't it, by Srila Prabhupada? This is from 6.10.8 Bhagavatam, that particular purport, 6.10.8. I was seeing that appeal, you know, in preaching, especially to younger people. Part of the appeal is, know, there at least some people, they had this idea, I want to do something for humanity. We have protests and so on. So if you want to do something with your life that has value, give your life to Krishna. Give your life to Krishna, spreading Krishna consciousness. Of course, Prabhupada did that in his preaching. Of course, he called on us to do that kind of thing repeatedly. The whole world is suffering, as we read. It's an ocean of tears. So if you want to do something, then give your life. Don't give your life for, you know, serving your country. Give your life to serving everyone, serving humanity. So I don't know what time is it. Okay. Anyway, I have a whole bunch of things. I'll just keep going for a little while here. So let's see. What do we have here? This is also about Vrijasura. Seeing his army broken and all the asuras, even those known as great heroes, fleeing the battlefield out of intense fear, Vrijasura, who was truly a great-minded hero, smiled and spoke the following words. So Vrijasura, the demons are being defeated by the demigods and they're running away. But Vrijasura is a really powerful, courageous, real Kshatriya type. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, even so-called demons sometimes have exalted devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Indra smiled reassuringly at Vrijasura. So part of this, what comes out, actually it's interesting because earlier when Krishna is talking, the demigods go to Lord Vishnu to appeal to Krishna because Vrijasura is so powerful. And Krishna actually tells him, or Lord Vishnu tells him, that he's actually a devotee. But it doesn't seem to have caught on exactly. Because it's that when Vrijasura is fighting him, then he realizes, whoa, he really is a devotee. So Prabhupada says, even so-called demons sometimes have exalted devotees for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Indra smiled reassuringly at Vrijasura. So he was happy to hear. Actually, he was a better devotee than Indra. This Vrijasura, of course, he wasn't really a demon. So then, okay, I already got that. Lord Shiva is always deep. Let's see. Oh, this is, so what happens, of course, in this same story, you know, Chitraketu, who was Vrijasura, Chitraketu, before that, he, because what happens is after Shukadeva Goswami, I guess it's Shukadeva who asks the question, I mean, Shukadeva is telling the story, then Pariksit Maharaj, if I remember correctly, he asks, you know, how did he become such a great devotee? He's a demon. How is he a devotee? So then he tells the whole story of Chitraketu, how Chitraketu had all these wives, and, you know, his whole story. He eventually becomes a devotee. Of course, he was already a devotee, but he becomes more of a devotee. And he becomes very powerful, and it says that part of his spiritual progress was he was able to fly around in airplanes all over the universe. So he goes to Kailas, apparently, or someplace where Lord Shiva is, and he sees Parvati sitting on the lap of Lord Shiva, and he says, oh, this is amazing. How can this be? Lord Shiva is, you know, sitting in a public place with all these sages around. He's got his wife on his lap. And so, of course, Parvati gets upset, and she curses him to become Vrijasura, to become a demon. So then what happens, Chitraketu, he says, okay, whatever you want. It's kind of interesting in that story because Chitraketu says, I didn't do anything wrong, but if you think I did, I accept the curse. But a lot of the verses tend to say that he did do something wrong. It's interesting because his mood apparently was, he was trying to convey that, or part of it, sometimes we get different lessons. It's okay for Lord Shiva to do this. He can do whatever he wants. He's Lord Shiva. So, but maybe the example's not so good for others or whatever. So anyway, so it says here, then, what this Chitraketu, he's being cursed to become a demon by Parvati. So then he says, I accept it. There's that famous verse there. It says, Narayana prasarveyana kutaschana bibhiti. Wherever the devotee is, the servant of Narayan, he's happy, whether he's heaven, hell, in between, it doesn't matter. So it's, of course, Parvati became angry, but Lord Shiva didn't. Lord Shiva, who is always deep in knowledge, could understand Chitraketu's purpose. So here Chitraketu is being given the benefit of the doubt by Lord Shiva. And therefore, he was not at all angry. Rather, he simply smiled and remained silent. So Chitraketu is criticizing him, apparently, on the surface, but Lord Shiva understood, I know why he's doing this. He's actually doing it to glorify me. So he smiled. Let's see. Again, it says, and then later, a little later in this same, it says, when Lord Shiva and Parvati saw that Chitraketu, although informed of the curse, was unafraid, they smiled, being fully astonished by his behavior. Okay, I guess I should just stop here. It's getting a little late. I have more, but I'll kind of went through the cantos and picked up. There's several of them in the eighth canto also. Let's see, who do I have here? Kasyapa Muni, Prahlad, our Lord Nrisimhadeva is smiling. And let's see, again, Lord Shiva. Oh, no, Lord Vishnu. Oh, Lord Vishnu. When Lord Shiva asked to see Mohini Murti, he smiled with gravity, it says. Lord Vishnu smiled with gravity. That's an interesting phrase, because you think grave is someone who's grave is not smiling, but smiling with gravity, because it's not like a joke, but knowing and kind of smile. I think that's the idea. He smiled with gravity. It says, Prahasya is laughing. Actually, Prabhupada translates it as laughing in the word for word. Bhava Gambhiram. So Gambhira means grave. Bhava Gambhiram. With serious gravity, he smiled. And then Kasyapa, he smiled at his wife Aditi when she asked for... Actually, you know the story, Aditi, I said I was going to stop, but I almost stopped. The Bali Maharaj had taken over the heavenly planets, and Aditi wanted to get it back for her sons, the demigods. So Kasyapa comes home, and he sees his wife, and he sees that she's not happy, but she serves him very, very pleasingly. He's very, very pleased, and he has a smile on his face. And he says, okay. And he's so happy because she serves him so nicely. So what do you want? And she says, I want a son to kill Indra. So that took the smile off his face. And then another, because after that he says, oh, women are so crooked, their hearts are like razors, even though their face is blossom like a lotus. So he gets really heavy. So here's my final little note here. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead had thus spoken to Bali Maharaj, what did he tell him? He said, Bali Maharaj said, I can give you anything. I can give you a whole dvipa, you know, if you want, one of the varshas or dvipas if you want. I can give you a Brahmin's daughter for a wife. I can give you a home and riches, all these. He said, I just want 3 steps of land, that's all. So then Bali Maharaj says, okay. Then he says, Bali smiled and told him, all right, take whatever you like. So you get the sense that Bali is thinking, well, he even says it, you're just an innocent child, you don't know what you're asking for. So he's smiling, kind of, almost you might say, in kind of a condescending way. This child doesn't know what he's doing, so he smiles, and he says, all right, whatever you want, it's only 3 steps of land. But he also lost his smile. Of course, he got it back. One interesting thing in that story is always you hear that it said that Shukracharya cursed him. Shukracharya was predicting, because Shukracharya actually knew this is Vishnu. He said, you're going to end up in hell. That comes up a few times. He's going to hell. But he's going to Sutala Loka, and Lord Vishnu is going to be his gatekeeper. And it's already like a heavenly planet, these subterranean. They're called Bilaswarga, the lower heavenly planets. So the opulence is greater than Indra's. So that's described as hell. But they're also described as hell. But how it's hell when you have Lord Vamanadeva as your gatekeeper at your beck and call, it's definitely not hell. So it's kind of interesting that it's the idea is there that he's going to go to hell because of what he did, not being able to fulfill his vow. Anyway, so Bali Maharaj had a smile there, at least for some time. And then, of course, he's smiling at the end because Lord Vamanadeva is going to be his gatekeeper at this planet, Sutala Loka. All right, let me just read this again in Sanskrit. Maitreya uvacha sa ugra dandvanya deva bhashi asich tushnim aravindanapam diyo pragrinnan smita shobitena mukena cheto lulube deva hutya Sri Maitreya said, O great warrior Vidura, the sage Gardama said this much only, and then became silent, thinking of his worshipable Lord Vishnu, who has a lotus on his navel. Actually, I wanted to mention this. Aravinda Nabham says, whose navel is adorned by a lotus. So sometimes it says his navel is like a lotus, looks like a lotus, or is shaped like a lotus. See, it's translated. But most places where I was looking in the Veda place, most places where this comes up, lotus navel, Lord, it says he's called that because a lotus grows from his navel. Of course, Lord Brahma is born on that. So that's the generally the way it's done in the word for word in the Bhagavatam. That's the way it's explained. The Lord from whom the lotus is grown from his navel. As he silently smiled, Gardama, his face captured the mind of Devahuti, who began to meditate upon the great sage. Okay. Anything? Any smiling? No. Yes, Prabhu.
Well, not about the smile, but I was thinking, what's the synonymous Sanskrit for word transcendental? In Sanskrit, which synonymous for the transcendental? What, because it looks like it's a Latin word.
Oh, here. You're talking about the verse?
Not in a verse, but just transcendental. When we say, there is no Sanskrit word transcendental. Well, there is, but what's that? What's
different that? Words. Well, pada means transcendental sometimes. And guna atita, you could say that's transcendental. Guna atita, above the modes of material nature. Those couple of things come to mind. I'm sure there are other phrases that are translated.
Transcendental means transcend. That's the meaning, transcend.
Yeah, you could look up the etymology of that. Trans. So trans means, above, generally. Transcendent. Yeah, I don't know how it breaks up exactly.
I was just thinking about the classes about smiling. Just yesterday, Pastor Prabhu was showing a picture of Mukunda Maharaj at the hospital. So he was lying down on the hospital bed and he had a smile on his face. But the sweet part was that there was the nurse there and Maharaj was holding the nurse's hand. And you should have seen that she had such a huge smile. You can see the Maharaj's affection or his whatever. I don't know what the conversation is going on there. But the smile of a devotee and how it can actually affect a non-devotee. Mm. Just like looking at the picture, I kept on looking at how Maharaj was smiling and how the nurse was like a ear-to-ear smile. And it's just like she was going transcendental, I guess, with getting that mercy. So, yeah, smile is something. It's the smile of devotees. You're reading so many smiles of different, even for our preaching purposes, smiling at people. We go on Harinam or whatever.
Yeah.
It's such an effect, smiling, It's just such a thing to meditate upon.
It's funny. I think of that on Harinam, how if you stand back and look at the devotees, mostly they're not smiling. I forget who it was. Some devotee used to do a lot of antics, and I thought he should just stand in front of the devotees and make the devotees laugh the whole time during kirtan. Because, when you chant, you don't necessarily smile while you're chanting, right? You're concentrating on chanting the holy name. But it's nice to smile at people. And, of course, when you smile, of course, what happens, people smile back. That's the other thing. Sometimes I think we should have an official smiler out there, looking at all the cars and the people and smiling. It makes people happy. They have a good opinion, it's the impression we make on people is important, So, yeah, we can smile. All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.